And you're listening to the Practice Power Up Podcast with your host, Damian Adler. Damian, the co-founder of Power Diary and a clinical psychologist, will bring to you proven strategies on how to run and grow your practice. Happy listening.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Damian Adler. I'm a co-founder of Power Diary and also a registered psychologist. In addition to Power Diary, and in fact, how Power Diary came to be, for many years, my wife and I actually launched and ran a group psychology private practice. So we started out very small and grew that over the years. So I've got a lot of hands-on experience in utilizing tools, goal setting, and so forth in the direct application of growing health practices and also having a life at the same time. Now, very excited to have with me today Fiona, who is my co-host. So thank you very much, Fiona. Perhaps you'd like to tell people a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to be here too. I head up the strategy and communications here at Power Diary. My background includes building some businesses, and I've also worked previously with one of the big four consulting companies where I had the opportunity to help some of Australia's largest companies as a strategy consultant. And yeah, for the past few years, I've had the privilege of working with the amazing team here at Power Diary.
Very good. Thank you very much, Fiona. And now I'm going to jump into talking a little bit more about you and some of the things that you have achieved. And one of the reasons that, you know, as when we were putting this together, I was very excited about the idea of you coming on and joining us. And I'll just update the slide here because it seems to be stuck on there. There we go. So more about you here, Fiona. We're going to focus the spotlight in on you for a second. Fiona, you've achieved some truly sort of amazing things. And just to kind of list through them, and this is by no means an exhaustive list either, but you summited Mount Everest in 2006, so being the third Australian woman ever to do so, and yes, it is the Mount Everest. You have got a MBA in addition obviously to your undergrad. You started and grew a online company called Word of Mouth Online, or some people might know it as WOMO. So that was sort of a business review site that you started from scratch and grew it to become, Australia's largest review site, which is absolutely phenomenal. So starting from, zero reviews, nothing to the most active, platform. So that amazing. Then you moved your whole family to France and then lived there for 7 years. And I believe during that time, you also learnt to speak French, which I know from some of our earlier conversations was not necessarily something that came supernaturally that you felt. It wasn't just like clicks. And then through that that time, in fact, while you were in France, you also developed or discovered you had breast cancer and thyroid cancer, and went through the treatment, full treatment for both of those, and have since recovered your health and also, your fitness, and continued on doing all these, sort of amazing things. And so with all those there, I mean, you must be some kind of superwoman, right? There's a secret magic power that you have that allows you to kind of do this.
Absolutely not. No.
No, okay.
In fact, I mean, I guess in relation to, the Everest thing, people, that's obviously the most sort of thing that seems to stand out when I talk to people. But I was actually, if I think back to my, background prior to that, I was actually someone who was never thought of as very sporty. I was one of those kids that was, looking for an excuse to get out of, health or physical education classes at school and, you know, skipping
so were
them
you,
when
so
I
the
could.
La-
and...
You were last picked for teams then, I'm guessing? Like if you were,
yep.
yeah, okay, you weren't the one that people were going for straight away. No, okay, gotcha.
Not at all, not at all. So it was literally, I mean, obviously I got into it and it wasn't like I just went straight to, you know, climb Mount Everest. It was a progression of little things leading to slightly bigger and, you know, there was a huge progression. But yeah, when I went back to my old school after climbing Everest, I went to speak and to sort of, you know, present on it. One of my old teachers said, you know, you were always so stubborn. It's no surprise you climbed Everest. So that was her impression of me. And at first I was fairly offended at that. Mm-hmm, yeah. But then I really thought, well, that's, I guess, you know, what she's referring to as stubbornness, I can reframe that as persistence, which is, you know, one of the strategies we'll sort of talk about here. And really, yeah, there's no magical sort of natural abilities or, you know, being, you know, born with certain traits or anything. It's, yeah, it's really just, I guess, avoiding some of the traps of goal setting, I think, and achieving them. And then, you know, some applying some strategies that actually work. And it's not to say that they've worked every time or we've actually, sorry, it's not to say that I think they do work every time, actually, but it's not to say that I'm successfully able to apply them every time. But yeah, hopefully what we'll go through today will be of some help to, yeah, the people, everyone here listening. But, you know, yourself as well, you've achieved some pretty incredible things as well. You've had a career path which has been out of the ordinary. You know, you've had in your career in public sphere hospitals, you've, you know, ruffled a few feathers. You've started a group practice from nothing and against all advice, taken a different approach, which ended up being very successful. And of course, growing Powerdiary, you know, starting from basically nothing and growing that to a platform that's used globally by thousands and thousands of allied health professionals with local operations in each country. I'm sure those things were pretty easy to do.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, very similar to you, you know, each of those things done and that, you know, I feel sort of, you know, proud about, really they've come about by, you know, applying those, the sort of strategies that we're going to go through today. Some, you know, people will have sort of, you know, heard of before. And it's really that kind of, you know, idea that there are these sort of things that are commonalities of when you achieve a goal. And we certainly, you know, in the few months that we've been preparing, you know, this presentation where we've been really looking at, you know, what those overlaps are. And we found that with these, you know, these things that you achieve that are hard, you know, none of this, nothing, you know, anything worthwhile is not easy, right? But there's always, there's a thread there of common things that kind of lead to that sort of attainment. And very much like you, you know, and I think it's a point I kind of want to make, you know, about that, you know, even though, you know, we've, you know, achieved, you know, separate things that are great, it doesn't mean that you get it right every time. There's plenty of goals actually that I've set and, you know, I haven't achieved, you know, even last year or there'll be things when I look at that, why? It's usually because I missed one of these kind of steps or one of these phases. But I think, you know, it's important to kind of to realize that it's not, and so, you know, sometimes you see people selling these kind of solutions, you know, almost like this is a magic thing and, you know, it will work, you know, with low effort and, you know, it'll always be successful, but it's just, it's not like that. So, you know, why talk about goals? You know, I think there are things that really do separate, sort of difference, you know, between those who sort of achieve things and those who find themselves sort of, you know, routinely kind of, you know, frustrating. You know, that's important. And the other thing I want to, you know, cover this is some health, you know, professions will receive some training on how we can help other people achieve goals. And we might be kind of comfortable, you know, with that, but rarely do we actually receive any information. It's really directed, you know, at us. Yeah, you know, I think that's often the case. Let's jump into, you know, looking at how, you know, what goals sort of mean in terms of the future. And I think you had some things you were wanted to talk about
Well, just really quickly, I think, you know, mastering the skill of setting and achieving goals is arguably one of the most important skills we can learn. And I think it is a skill. It's not sort of a trait or anything like that. But, you know, it's also easy, you know, if we're not successful in this, to easily sort of get into a negative cycle with this. You know, we set a goal, we don't have good strategies or any strategies, we fail to achieve the goal, it sort of leads to us having reduced confidence and feeling frustrated. Then we've got a reduced propensity to set goals, we set lower goals and then don't achieve those. And, you know, down and down we go into this cycle where we really just don't believe in goals and don't think that they can sort of pull us forward. Mm-hmm. And of course, what we want is the opposite cycle where we set a goal, you know, we have some strategies, we make good progress, we have increased confidence and increased commitment to them, which of course leads to a much more higher chance of us succeeding in them.
Yeah.
So that's all I really wanted to say there. And I think, you know, it's valuable for anyone, no matter where they are on that sort of journey towards sort of learning how to set and achieve goals.
Yeah, I think it's sort of sad too. Like sometimes if people have been trapped in that negative cycle for a bit, you know, losing that confidence in their ability, you know, they almost sort of start to make inferences about themselves, like, oh, I'm hopeless. I never stick to anything. Like, let's not, you know, I'm not going to bother now. And there's that deflated.
Tried that, didn't work.
Exactly. Yeah. And I know certainly over the years, dealing, you know, and working with, you know, Powerdiary customers, you know, it's interesting. You know, that you'll see sometimes people have felt that way with their practices. You know, they're kind of, I've tried this and I've wanted to achieve certain goals with it and sort of almost been stuck in the same kind of rut and then have lost confidence around it. So it can happen, you know, to anyone. Even if we're in the business of helping other people, it doesn't make us immune.
And it's not a reflection of their intelligence, their work ethic, their anything. It's just, you know, they haven't quite grasped this particular aspect.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, I guess the reason for that is that achieving goals is really hard. I mean, you know, we probably, you know, often when we set a goal, we feel really energized, excited, enthused about it all. We're ready to go. But, you know, in reality, the success rates are really, really low. And we've all heard different figures about these. But, you know, typical ones are that 40 to 50% of people make a New Year's resolution. And, you know, after about 1 week, maybe 2 weeks, it's gone away, and you know they haven't met it, and they've dropped totally off the bandwagon. They're no longer even striving towards that goal. And you know, there's also stats about in January, you know, everyone starting up the membership in gyms goes way up, health clubs, dietary products, all of that sort of stuff, sales go up, sales of alcohol and chocolate often go down, but that doesn't last long either. So it's you know, it's hard work. And these are things that are just easy to measure, of course. But even the black and white way these types of stats are presented to us shows the way that most people approach goals is totally the wrong way. So we'll go into some of that in a minute. But I guess we just wanted to reiterate that, you know, by definition, goals are difficult. Like, we don't set goals that are already part of our habits. Like, we're not setting a goal to brush our teeth every day or to get to work on time for most of us. You know, it's just stuff that we're doing. It's the hard things that we, you know, we want to sort of reach towards that we're not already doing or that we're doing and we perhaps shouldn't be doing that are hard. So, you know, it's by definition they're hard. So, you know, I think it just helps to recognize that and not expect the process to necessarily be easy either. But yeah, I think, you know, there are, you know, if we think of the successful people that we might admire, whether they're, I don't know, politicians, they're entrepreneurs, sports people, anything, they would all put down, you know, goal setting and achieving as one of their, you know, they might not even say it that way, but that if we look at their process, that would be what they do. But that, and they would say, most of them would say anyway, that they're not exceptional people by nature, but they just have a process and a method that is working for them.
Yeah.
So,
it's and I think that idea that those sort of people that might stand out as achieving goals, I mean, and I remind myself of this all the time, is that they all have the same 24 hours that we do, right? And I find that a good touchstone to come to, because if I'm doing something that I, you know, have that niggling feeling isn't that efficient or isn't that good, I'll sometimes think, like, would such and such, whoever it might be that I kind of hold in, you know, high esteem in this way, think, would they be spending their time doing this? You know, and if not, what would they be doing differently? You know, because clearly they'd be spending their time doing something different if they're getting different outcomes. So, you know, I think it's a good reminder and means, to me anyway, it makes it feel more achievable. Like, when we think about it, there is, you know, we've got the same 24 hours. So it's just a matter of what we're actually doing with those 24 hours. So if we look at, to get into some of the sort of common goal setting mistakes, you know, this is a good, we'll sort of start with the mistakes and then we'll actually go into some of the strategies that work. But first one, of course, is just not having any goals. and, you know, having goals that are too sort of vague, and I think we've all been there, but where we might, yeah, really more have a wish. I think, you know, it's just like, oh, I would like to be, you know, it wouldn't be nice. It's a daydream. you know, rather than a sort of a goal, really is sort of tightly defined and time bound where possible, you know, really focus, you know, exactly what that is. Then conversely, you know, having too many goals, and I look, I'm guilty of this and I'm a repeat offender. So, you know, see, I have some lessons I have to learn many, many times. And, you know, this is one of them. I'll end up, you know, setting sort of too many goals. And of course, we know that we only have X amount of attention, energy and focus, and it just gets diversified. So if you have low intensity, essentially, you know, in each area because it's been divided up too much, then really you sort of don't achieve anything. And I often look at it, you know, when I'm trying to remind myself of this, I think about it like a magnifying glass. You know, if you get a magnifying glass and, you know, you're only capturing a very small amount of sun, but if you focus that small amount of sun into a single dot point, like, you know, then it gets hot enough, right? That's how you start a fire, right? And so, you know, just that singular focus on something can really create a lot of heat and intensity. But if you've got the magnifying, you know, glass up and you're spreading that bit of light across a lot of things, really the temperature underneath doesn't really change at all. And I'll often sort of just think about that as a way of reminding myself that really you have to focus in on a few things and do them well. The next one is around, you know, they'll use a sort of mistake, very common, set and forget. So, you know, they kind of set it. What we mean, you know, there's some things that are good, set and forget, some routines and so forth. But in this case, it's, you know, set the goal, you know, usually around, you know, start of something, start of the new year or whatever it might be, spike in enthusiasm, you know, to do something. And then never come back to it. It's never planned, you know, never really incorporated into the rhythms of the person's life. And therefore it gets forgotten because life's busy and we usually have to create space for goals and for achievement because mostly our lives are busy with other things. So it just sort of disappears. And we see this extremely commonly and, you know, and it's something that we've got to be on the lookout for.
I guess we just have to remember we're not naturally doing these things. That's why we've set them as goals. So we've got to be, you know, super deliberate.
Exactly. Because it, they're not things forced on us, right? The things that are forced on us, you know, that, that we do them, right? But these are the things that are value adds that make the real difference. And linked to that, you know, is not having an implementation approach. So they're never broken down, right, into actions. The last couple we've got, you know, here is around the focus is, you know, really about on outcomes. And this is a really common one, and it's slightly tricky because part of goal setting is to think about the outcome that we want. But actually the focus and the day-to-day focus really needs to be on the inputs, you know, to that rather than on just the outcome because, you know, the inputs ultimately are going to make a difference. There's a lack of emotional connection. So if we look at people who don't achieve goals and what the difference, you know, between those who do and those who don't are, what you'll find is that the people that didn't achieve goals typically were never that emotionally connected to the goal. And that means that it might be they have a vague desire for something but they never really sort of stopped and spent the time thinking about what would it mean, you know, for me to achieve that. How would I feel? What would be different? And really get that kind of emotional buy-in to a goal so it becomes something that's, you know, really tangible, real, and emotional. Like ultimately we're emotional creatures and, you know, as much as we like to overlay logic, you know, we we often act, you know, emotionally, and then we use the logic to justify it afterwards. You know, getting that emotional bond when people don't do that, that's highly correlated with not achieving the goal. So just quickly some things we thought would outline to demonstrate, like, you know, because if we can pick up on these straight away, you can look at, okay, there's some areas that we can often sort of get sort of derailed. All right, so let's shift gears now and look at goal setting and achievement and look at the strategies that actually work rather than just the pitfalls of what things we all can do wrong. So,
and literally just writing out different things, perhaps having two columns on your page and just doing a kind of a brain dump of where we are at the moment. And then perhaps taking that and thinking about what could be the most important and most impactful areas or the most impactful change that I could make. Like, rather than, you know, like we were saying, you know, choosing these 17 different things that I want to fix, let's, which I do have that same propensity as well, to choose way too many things and quite more than I can chew, which doesn't work so well, is to really just, you know, think about, if I could only do one thing, what would it be? If I could only do two things, maybe what would it be? And maybe leave it at that, if I could achieve these two things. And the reason is, if you focus your energy, obviously you can go a lot further with one direction. And sometimes that has a sort of a knock-on effect in other areas anyway. And other times you can say, okay, well, I've done that. And then the next year or the next quarter or the next whatever, you can sort of change the focus. But doing one thing at a time or a few things at a time makes a huge difference.
And we actually use this in Power Diary, and this particular approach is really, I think, you know, nicely driven
as much as possible
by you, because you remind us of this all the time, right? Like,
I do.
Hey, if we've got all these sort of projects that we're all working on, but none are actually live in the field and making a difference to our customers, then all that effort, although eventually they'll all, you know, be done, but in the meantime, that value isn't being delivered to our customers. And I think this is one that you remind, hey, if we focus on fewer things, delivering and getting those into the hands of customers so they're benefiting from that, you know, better for everyone. And it's very good at kids, you know, drilling this home, you know, for us. But it makes such a difference. I mean, it's very, very true.
Yeah. Because we've all got, I don't know, there's reasons we don't like to sometimes finish tasks and we start a new one, or we have, you know, work on something that's halfway done. And yeah, but forcing ourselves just to keep the focus and actually get something out the door is often important. But another thing I like to think about here is projecting forward and sort of imagining yourself. Perhaps you're at a dinner party a year from now, you meet up with someone, a friend you haven't seen all year, and they ask, how was your year? What's happened? And you say, really good, because, and then what would you like to be saying then? If you can sort of think about it from that point of view, I'm trying to say, then you can, it kind of helps you think, well, how do I want to reflect on my year in a year from now? So that can be useful as well. But then the important part here is to really articulate the goal or the goals in writing. So, you know, being as clear as possible. And we've all heard those sort of stats about people that, you know, write down their goals versus ones that don't. So I won't repeat those again, but, you know, just thinking about the one or two goals, perhaps there's one business or one professional and one personal goal that you might set, and getting as clear as possible in writing as you can with them.
And again, I think, you know, with Power Diary right from the start, you know, we did this, you know, very kind of clearly and deliberately, you know, like, okay, what do we want to, you know, how do we want this, system, what impact do we want it to make for health, you know, professionals, and, you know, literally dot pointed it out, you know, what does that look like when done well. And, you know, obviously we've refined and tweaked things over over the years, but I think the same actually with when my wife and I started our private practice, we were like crystal clear at the start when we set the goal that we wanted to build it in a way that it would scale. And that it was, well, initially it would be reliant on our, you know, our direct, you know, billings and our direct consultation, that was really just step one to sort of prove the concept of what we were doing. But everything was built around the idea of it being able to be being a group practice, essentially, to create an atmosphere with this group, and that the revenue from that was not going to be linked to the amount of consulting hours that Beck and I put in. So being that sort of crystal clear, again, it's a commonality I've seen in any other things that I've achieved that I consider worthwhile, you know, that's something that is always there at the foundation. It's good.
And very related is the next point, I think, actually.
Yes.
Which is really, well, I think if you actually use that word, about being able to see, you know, clearly how this looks. And I would really take this as far as going to, you know, really practicing the sort of the art of visualizing what that really looks like. And this helps set us on a mental course and influences our behavior. And, you know, it might seem a little bit airy fairy and a bit, I don't know, daydreamy. But there's actually more and more really hard science behind this. And if you look at figures, something like 70 to 90% of Olympians now regularly practice visualization techniques. And it's not that they say, oh, yes, I do it. Their coach will say, okay, in the morning you do this physical training, then you have your breakfast, then you do your, I mean, I'm just making this up, of course, but then you do your, you know, this visualization, and you do this other visualization, then you do this other training, then you do this other visualization, and then you have a rest, and then you, you know, their day has these visualizations structured into it. And really it's been defined as just creating an event or scene in your mind. But the point here is, and you know, I've done this for certain things, and it's actually quite hard to do. Because again, by definition, this goal that you've set is probably something that you probably haven't experienced before. So you can't, it's, you know, it really takes some work to kind of imagine it in real life in pictures. And so, yeah, the idea is to really picture parts of the goal in your mind. Like, so it could be, you know, in this context, like imagine walking into your clinic in the future state that you picture it. You know, maybe do you have extra team members? Are you in a different premise? Maybe you're working from home. You know, it could be all different kinds of things, but how do you actually see that? Or what do you see when you look at your calendar? Is it full if you're wanting more clients right now? Or is it, you know, got a lot of space in it because you're wanting to cut back down and have other people do certain things or have less actual rostered hours on? So what, you know, kind of week are you looking for? Perhaps what time do you leave? Can you actually picture yourself getting up at whatever time and leaving, you know, your clinic? So, or perhaps there's no paperwork and all of your notes are up to date. Perhaps you can sort of see those piles of paper, you can see the clean desk in front of you.
Perhaps you've gone paperless, you know.
Exactly.
You've invented an amazing practice management system, you know, and you're paperless, for example.
And also experts tell us that we should not just visualize the end result that we're looking for, but we should also visualize the process, and also the process when it's hard. So often the example used here is, say your goal is to run a marathon. You don't just sort of visualize yourself crossing the line and everyone, you know, cheering you on. You visualize yourself getting up in the dark when it's raining and doing, you know, when you don't feel like it, when your legs are heavy from the run yesterday, and actually still walking out the door and starting your jog. So, you know, in this case, I don't know, if you're wanting to grow your team, maybe you imagine yourself reviewing resumes and interviewing team members, or, you know, proactively marketing or doing business development sort of work, or presenting to local groups and things. Or maybe you're working on your website and you're learning how to use WordPress or whatever it might be. But, you know, you can actually imagine yourself doing those actual things that are going to be what it takes to achieve whatever goal you might have set.
Yeah, and I think the point you're making before too, I think is a good one, that it sometimes it seems airy-fairy because you see this idea of visualizing, like, you know, you see it pop up in like pop psychology things, and you see it as a kind of, and I think it actually kind of, when you see it in that context, it kind of cheapens it, because the real power of it is not often communicated. The real reason that works is not often communicated, and often it's almost presented like, oh, it's just magic, right? Visualize and then these things magically appear. But, you know, as you were saying, there's real brain changes that are occurring. And one of the things that, you know, I notice a lot when I'm visualizing well is that when I'm making decisions, if I'm making a decision or doing a behavior that is inconsistent with that goal, there's like these alarm bells that kind of go off, because it feels, you know, like, oh, these two things don't coexist, right? And I can, so it's a, like a warning system, you know, for me, where I think if I was just vaguely wanting to achieve something and not really visualizing it, it wouldn't have anywhere near the impact. There wouldn't be that alarm system, because it's almost like, you know, visualizing tricks your brain into sort of thinking you've already achieved it. Or if you're visualizing getting out in the rain and going for the, you know, and training for the marathon, you know, your brain actually thinks, oh, you know, if you visualize that enough, oh, I've got out in the rain many, many times, right? Like, you know, that's just what I do, right? Because the brain actually has the trouble sometimes distinguishing between a visualization or you know, an imagination versus, you know, reality. It's why there's problems with eyewitness testimony and things like that, because, you know, people, our brains aren't that good at distinguishing between, you know, real memories and things that we've imagined. So we can use that to our advantage. And, you know, this visualization, it's sort of so much more powerful than often the way it gets kind of thrown around. It can be life-changing.
Yeah.
This episode was brought to you by Power Diary. Work smarter, not harder. Power Diary, the complete practice management system for allied health professionals. Our all-in-one system with over 100 powerful features for health practitioners includes appointment scheduling, client messaging, SOAP notes, telehealth portal, payment integrations, and much, much more. Let Power Diary streamline and simplify your day-to-day operations so you can take care of clients. Join a live demo or start a free trial today. Learn more at www.powerdiary.com.
So, I think that also leads into the next one with identity type sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the sort of creating this sort of the emotional kind of connection. So when we're imagining and we're, you know, we're visualizing what that achievement would be like, and we're also trying to get into the emotional state of that achievement, so it feels, you know, really, really kind of positive, and we get that sort of connection to it. But also, like, we can actually use negative emotional state with goals, you know, as a motivator as well. And look, as a psychologist, you know, I'm of course always, we're always trying to encourage people to harness the positive, right? But also, I think, harness whatever works for you, right? So sometimes I'll find that no matter how much I might want to try and use like a positive emotional state to achieve something, I will sometimes use a negative emotional state to achieve something. So just sort of thinking about an example of this, a few years ago, so I've got, there's myself and two older brothers, and I've got other siblings as well, but in this case, we've got two older brothers, and we were going on a trek that was going to be quite sort of challenging, you know, physically challenging. And I sort of made a fairly, you know, late decision I would go as well. And, you know, like, this is going to be in a group. And I've got to tell you, I was really, you know, I had to do a lot of training. And the only way that I got really motivated was I had in my mind, like, how embarrassing, right, it would be to be like the younger brother who just like didn't train enough, kind of slowed the group down. And it was like, didn't put in the effort. And I just thought, gee, that if, you know, I could visualize how bad that would be, right? I was thinking, I do not want to be that guy in the group that really is you know, needing to be looked after, or is, you know. And so that idea of that and the negative emotion attached to that, that was the most powerful motivator, right? To when I felt like I didn't want to train and didn't want to, that was like, no, which is worse? Like getting out there now and training because, you know, when I don't feel like it, or I'd imagine being a scenario where I'm holding up the group and, you know, so you can use that. It works and it works. And I think go for it. Right? If you just find whatever drives you, whatever, you know, really helps you kind of move forward with something, utilize that. And by the way, it was an awesome trip. It was great. I felt really fit and felt really on top of it when I went. So it's not like it you worked. Stay in that emotional state. Yeah. If there are other ways you can, you know, tap into things about using kind of affirmations or positive self-talk, you know, as well, that can help, or any kind of use like identity-based sort of statements or thoughts to kind of, and I think you've got some sort of thoughts around how to do that effectively. What do you find?
Thinking about affirmations when I was trying to learn French, and as you sort of talked before, I found that very difficult, very awkward for me. It wasn't something that came naturally at all. And so, you know, I remember hearing someone say, oh, you know, you should use affirmations. And again, they can sound a bit airy-fairy. But what I actually realized, learned was the nuance here is that if I used a statement like, you know, I speak French fluently or comfortably. You know, it felt completely wrong. My brain would just go, no, you don't, you're hopeless.
Right.
Literally.
Yep.
But a statement, if I could sort of rephrase that to a statement that, you know, I didn't reject. So it was something like, you know, I'm getting better at French every day and taking more opportunities to practice whenever I can. You know, that would sit more comfortably with me, and it, you know, I can sort of accept that, and it would sort of, you know, make me feel more confident. And, you know, it actually made me look for opportunities to practice whenever I could, because I'm now saying this thing to myself. So yeah, phrasing that in the right way is really important.
And I think that's where it goes wrong often, doesn't it, with ones that are, that, you know, when people just say, oh, say positive things, you know, affirmations, is that there's no connection with them, because your brain just is like, yeah, whatever, like, they're empty, yes. Like empty sort of, you know. And look, some people say that still works, whatever. I mean, I'm the same as you. I find unless it's sort of realistic and I can kind of get in touch with it, then, you know.
Yeah. I've heard people say there's like a ladder. So if you might have where you want to be right at the top, but you've got to sort of take the steps. And so maybe you put the affirmation is 2 or 3 steps ahead of where you are now, but it's got to be believable, something you can actually see.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that brings us to defining the goal and doing it a little bit differently than what we might. Yeah.
So where you can, I mean, it does depend on the goal a bit, I think, but you know, I don't know if how many people here have read James Clear's Atomic Habits or heard him speak, but he would say you don't need goals, you need systems, and we shouldn't focus too much on the end result, but just focus on the inputs. So, and depending on the goal, I really agree with this approach. So, you know, because a lot of goals that we might have, you know, we don't might like to admit this, but we don't actually directly affect the outcome. We don't have full control over it. So say you want to lose weight, for instance, you don't, on any given day, you don't really control what you weigh on that scale. But what you do control is what you've eaten, your exercise and those sorts of things. But you can still sometimes do all the right things and have not a positive result, and sometimes the opposite can happen as well, because there's a whole lot of other factors that are in play as well, and that can be with other things as well. You can have you know, a goal of reaching certain revenue levels, but you know, you don't completely control that. That's not something that you can't sort of make clients ring up and book. But you could have a goal to reach out to a certain number of referrers, or invest half a day in marketing per week, or you know, in the case of health, it could be, you know, you have a goal to eat salad 4 days a week, or walk a certain number of steps, or, you know, those types of things. So reframing it in terms of what we can actually do. And then that sort of leads in with some of the other things that we're talking about too, is like the tracking and sort of seeing the progress as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with that too, you know, if you take weight loss as a good example, that when you're focusing sort of on the inputs, it also is more likely to lead to sustaining that behavior post whatever the achievement is. So sometimes that idea that, you know, people might put these kind of short-term unsustainable effort or focus or behavior to achieve something. So we're thinking of weight loss, and, you know, yo-yo dieting is a good, you know, example. Someone might, okay, if they just focus on the outcome, I want to be, you know, weigh X kilos. Well, I mean, there's lots of ways to achieve that, and many of them are not very healthy, right? And so by focusing kind of on the inputs, I think it forces us to sort of develop the habits that then, you know, I think of them like levers that we can pull that are likely to get that, you know, that result. I think the reward mechanism is better too, right? If I can do it, if I can achieve it despite feeling that way, I think it sort of almost allows that, those difficulties to kind of coexist. You know, it's not like, oh, I really don't want to do it, I won't do it. It's sort of, I think that it provides a better pathway through it. And then, of course, you get the reward of, well, actually, okay, it was difficult, but I did it. And that becomes, you know, the tick, rather than, well, you know, if you think about it in weight terms, for instance, well, that walk I did, you know, might have, you know, almost no overall, change, that one walk. But when we look at it as, okay, it's, I've achieved that for today, I've done what I can for today, you know, it seems to, it's definitely linked to doing better and being able to kind of, be more on track. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about sort of translating goals into this sort of daily actions, because really it doesn't really matter, like, you know, how sort of great the goal is, right? Nothing kind of really happens without action. And this sort of, I mean, my over the years with business in particular, you know, I used to think that ideas were really valuable, like business idea or an app idea or whatever, right? Like I used to think that's really valuable, and I'd be almost like secretive about, you know, I'm going to kind of move you kind of closer, you know, what, and keep them, you know, so that every day you're doing things that kind of contribute to that. And it really doesn't matter like what the size of those actions are each day, because it will take you step by step. You know, I once ran a webinar it was before webinars, it was an in-person event on goal setting achievement. And we had about 20 people, and one of them had the goal to write a book, right? Like she wanted to author a book. She said, you know, all the normal things, no time, no, you know, focus, et cetera. And we ended up breaking that person's, you know, goal right down, like right down into, I think it was that she had time to write a paragraph a day or something. Right. And interestingly, about, you know, maybe 18 months after that, she actually sent me a manuscript, right, and said, this has gone to the, you know, the editor and publisher and whatnot. And, you know, even the tiny little bits that she could do every day, it eventually, you know, worked into that. And I think the amount of time, you know, sometimes that, like, we really shouldn't try and be doing too much, right? And I think you've got some thoughts around this, right? Like, not to overdo it.
Absolutely. Like, really. I mean, I actually think not even that it doesn't matter how big or small, like, really try and make them small, these actions.
Okay,
because,
right.
If you define them as too big, it leads to procrastination. They're too hard for us. Like, I think we overestimate how good we are at doing things. you know, like, say you want to have a focus on marketing for your practice, and one of your tasks you say is, okay, update my website. You might think that's one part of it, but that is huge. Like, that's way too big. You can't have that as an action. Like, you've got to literally break that down into something tiny. So it might be just find 3 web designers, or find another website I like, or write a, you know, a crappy first version of my about page, or, you know, just do some tiny little task that's going to incrementally, you know, add up. And if you do that each day, each week, it's going to have the cumulative effect of, you know, being something huge.
And actually, it's nicely to the way executive functioning works in our brain too, that sequencing events is one of the reasons that we don't start something or procrastinate, because, you know, like, say, updating my website, well, what do I start first? Where do I, you know, what? It's very hard for our brain to kind of attack that, you know, and address it. So it kind of gets put off. Where if you've broken that down, then there is a sequence to it, because you've written that.
I had to admit this, but just recently I was procrastinating on a task I needed to do, and others were waiting on it. And for whatever reason, I was just feeling a bit daunted by it and kept putting it off. And so I sort of started thinking, well, what can I do here? Like, I've just got to somehow get to this. So I thought, what is the very tiniest step I can do to sort of get myself going in this direction? And in this case, it was literally, you know, find the file I need to work on. Like, find, you know, go to my emails or messages or whatever it was, and find that file and open it. And, you know, I didn't actually do any work, but okay, now. But actually, that was taking up enough mental energy that was stopping me from doing the work. You know, once I actually did that small part, the rest of it, you know, started to flow. It wasn't as hard as I had thought.
That's the case often, isn't it? Once you do the first thing, then, you know, the rest of it just, you know, it flows on.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, identifying a few really small tasks, and again, not too many, and not too big, and then just really, I guess this is this point, taking small action consistently. So this is actually, the previous one was about identifying the actions. This is actually doing them. And, you know, I really believe that the rewards are in the doing. Like, even if we get the doing wrong some of the time, half the time, if we don't do, nothing happens. So this is, really close to my heart. But I think, you know, it's still hard to do things. Like, it's still, like, again, these things are on our list because on our part of our goals, because they're not coming naturally to us. So I guess there's some sort of techniques, some tactics that, you know, I think help us with this. So One thing that I find very useful is just kind of the Pomodoro technique. It's, you know, just to say, I'm going to set a timer, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever you think, but don't, you know, overestimate yourself. It's better to go too short than too long. And just commit to staying with that task for that amount of time. Even if you're, I don't know, staring at an empty piece of paper, a blank piece of paper or a blank screen, and you're not sure what to do, you're still thinking about that problem for that amount of time. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, thinking about how we might manage or approach, you know, children, like sometimes all of those tasks, yeah, all of those techniques apply to ourselves as well, much as we might not want to admit it. Yeah. And of course, I suppose probably the last point there is really important too, like building them into our daily routine. So having a time of day, perhaps when you work on a certain task or a certain type of task, or having apps that sort of remind you and help you be consistent with that, having time set aside for them as well can help enormously as well.
Yeah. And the other one that I like as well, yeah, personally, is I like doing crappy versions of things to start with, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, I'll get too caught up in trying to do something right and do it, be perfectionistic about it, or try and, you know. But that idea of, you know what, I'm just going to do a crappy version. And it's amazing then how, you know, how much easier it is, like, just to.
Yeah, it's much easier to fix the crappy version than, yeah exactly. Or else if I don't know how to start something, say, yeah, well, just start in the middle. Just exactly. Don't start at the start, start later.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's if it's a writing task and I can't think of, like, the right way to link it to the next thing, you know, I'll just put in, like, some hashes or something and then just go on with the next thought and make no effort at all to start with to link it or to make it make any sense. And the other thing I like here is that point around, I often think about, in extreme circumstances, how would you achieve X if you had a limited amount of time? Mm. So, you know, there's something that needs to be done that normally you might plan for 3 months. Well, what if I said, like, it had to be done this week, like, you know, life and death kind of had to be done. What would you actually do? And often it allows, it focuses your brain on you know, in technology, we'd call it an MVP. So, you know, a minimal viable product. So what's the skeleton of this that would still be, you know, useful and would be usable. So, you know, what's the bare bones of something? And often if we focus on achieving that first, if it's a task, and then we'll be able to kind of move forward. We'll be able to get, you know, we'll be able to build on that afterwards, but it makes it sort of really easy to begin with. So looking at tracking progress, you want to think about metrics that will be the most useful to reinforce the behavior, the actions, right? So there isn't one sort of metric or one, you know, like we think about, so, you know, often with weight, you know, people are going to think about, you know, the what the scale says. But again, if we break, you know, and change the metric to be about the number of times in a week that we may have, you know, gone for a walk, or the number of steps we've taken a day, maybe it's the number of letters we send, maybe it's around the number of days a week that we have our notes completed before we leave, you know, finish up for the day, you know, consulting. So, and then, you know, track that. So just find what metric and think about what metric is most important in terms of inputs and outputs. So what's having that impact? And then what's most motivating for you? So if you go home and go, okay, I've achieved these things, and you find that, you know, then track that, because keeping that, that going and feeding yourself that information, it'll keep you focused on the right things, and also then, you know, help with motivation. So it sort of keeps us, you know, it keeps us driving, driving forward. Now, if we look at the next one around staying on track, how do you do this, Joan? Yeah. How on earth do we stay on track?
Yeah, well, I think it's important because most people really literally forget about their goals. Like in their day-to-day life, they've forgotten. They're not sort of, you know, acting on them, they're not top of mind. So first thing is scheduling perhaps a weekly review time, perhaps blocking in a point on your calendar. It might be an evening or part of the day where you actually just read over your goals and think about them, think about the next actions that are going to help move you towards those. So that, I think, is really important. The last point here is using some sort of visual reminders, or not necessarily all visual, I guess, but putting, you know, just simple things, post-it notes on your computer screen or your bathroom mirror, so that you see them when you wake up in the morning and you're brushing your teeth or doing your hair and all that sort of stuff. You can actually read these things, and that's just going into your brain all the time. Having a message on your phone lock screen so that you're just seeing it regularly throughout your day, or perhaps an alarm reminder, perhaps as you know, I have an alarm telling me to go to bed. It doesn't always work, but
I actually have that too.
It
tells me 45 minutes before start the wind down now, because I'll try and
things that you need to remember at a certain time of day, that's perfect for a regular alarm reminder. I mean, some people have like a just a random time, like 2:13 in the afternoon, they sort of say, here's what your goals are, and you know, it's kind of, that can work as well. And also some people find that tokens can be really useful. Like it might be, I don't know, a piece of jewelry or a mug that they use, or a t-shirt that's sort of got something on it that reminds them of where they're heading. That can help as well. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to, I'm just mindful of time. We've sort of running out a little bit, but we're actually near
the end here. So I think we're really down now to a few extra tips, if you like. So those, you know, eight things we've talked about are sort of the ones that are kind of, you know, critical. Cool. But if we look at this here, you know, there are a few extra things that I think are linked to, you know, achieving and you know, correlated with getting where you want to be. So first of all, you know yourself. So think about other times that you've been successful in the past, and think about what worked. Like, why did you achieve that thing? You know, and it might be a recent example, it might be years ago, but think about something you've achieved and go, what was it about that? And try and be really honest with yourself about what it was that was motivating, what was different in how you approached it. And if it turns out that it was external pressure or external factors, that's fine. If that works for you, use that. So how do you recreate that same sort of environment to achieve what you want to do now? So it's not a matter of being judgmental or there's a right and wrong way, but just know what works for you. And it's sometimes, you know, it's funny, we don't think of looking to our own past to look at success. We're good at looking at it in terms of, you know, beating ourselves up about what we did wrong or, you know, whatnot, but think about it in terms of success. And then there's looking at the tendencies, there's kind of four here, and I think you really kind of connect with this quite well, right, about how these
this is
work.
An author, Gretchen Rubin, who has this framework where she puts people into these four tendencies, and it's about how they respond to expectations. So there's upholders respond readily to both outer and inner expectations of themselves. Questioners question all expectations, so they'll only meet an expectation if they think it makes sense. They need to know a lot of facts and data and supporting, you know, evidence. Obligers tend to meet outer expectations, but they might struggle to meet expectations that they impose on themselves. So they might go for a run if someone else is waiting for them, or they'll turn up for a gym class if they've booked in, but if there's no one there sort of expecting them, then they probably might not do it themselves. And rebels tend to resist all expectations, outer and inner. So they're more about their identity and having freedom and things like that. So I think knowing yourself, and I would guess that a lot of this group, well, the biggest group in general is obligers. And I think in terms of health practitioners is most likely to be obligers. So people who, you know, say things like, I wish I wasn't a people pleaser, or if I could just make time for myself, that, you know, they're doing things for other people, meeting everyone else's expectations, but not necessarily building that in for themselves. So, you know, I guess if you're in that category, there's no right or wrong, but it's to sort of leverage on that and to build in that accountability. So if you've got that, maybe it's a business goal, maybe you do need some outer accountability. Like maybe you have a coach or a colleague or, you know, someone else who's, you know, done the practice that you can sort of team up with and have like a little meetup every week and sort of report back of what you've actually progressed with. And those sorts of things might help you enormously.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're really leveraging your natural intrinsic kind of tendencies and nature to harness that to achieve, rather than it be something that you're fighting, you know, and that's sort of working against you. And I think that's very good. And then finally, you know, I think we just wanted to sort of touch on, you know, identifying why, you know, you could get derailed. And it's good, you know, to plan for this, you know, when things, sometimes they're going to go wrong, right? And again, we can look to the past and see, okay, what are the sorts of things that have gone wrong, and we can learn from that. But there's also some common things to look out for, and these are the sort of enemies of achievement. So, you know, if we're looking at, you know, perfectionism, that's, you know, overthinking, or being reluctant to take the final step. So we might have done most things, but that last part induces some anxiety because, you know, when I do that, I'm going to release this, or I'm going to put this out in the world, or I'm we're going to tell someone about it, then, you know, people hesitate and then they often don't then achieve. So being mindful of those things. One of my personal favorites, you know, that is understanding the difference between a lapse and a relapse in terms of behavior. If you're making a behavioral change or you're trying to achieve something, you know, a lapse, and let's say we take the goal of someone who might be looking to quit smoking, you know. So a lapse might be that they, you know, they went to a social function and they ended up smoking that night, right? Now, the next day, really, the decision that they make and the behavior kind of determines whether it's a lapse or a relapse. So a lapse would be if they said, you know, okay, I had one day or one evening where I've derailed a bit. Okay, that happened. That can happen. Now I'm going to get back on course and kind of, you know, and move on. Where a relapse is where the person mentally thinks, well, you know, I've blown it, right? You know, I had 30 days or 6 months, whatever it is, where I hadn't done that. Now I have. And then because of that internal self-talk, they kind of feel like they've failed and think that, you know, and then they'll continue that behavior, right? So they end up continuing to smoke because they're like, oh, you know, and they give up. And then that's a relapse, a relapse into the previous behavior. So if we expect that we have lapses, right? So if you're on a health kick, well, we expect that sometimes that, you know, ice cream, which I used to be particularly partial to, you know, that you know, that occasionally we may end up, you know, doing that and doing something we don't want. But if we just contain it in our mind, it really empowers us to get back on track and move forward and not beat ourselves up too much about that.
Yeah.
And yeah, finally, of course, yeah, expect it to be hard, right? The struggle, you know, it is the journey. And, you know, if it was easy, you know, everyone would be doing it. That's that kind of, you know, quote that I think is good to have in our head, you know, but it's going to be hard at times. And if we expect it, and, you know, that means that when we hit those hard times, we're like, yep, I knew that was coming. And let's see, I'll do my best at getting through that. And so, you know, it better mentally prepares us for it. And then finally, I think, when to, you know, persevere and when to change course. I think this is something that it's not always easy, is it, to know?
No, because we all hear stories about, you know, I don't know, crazy people that persevere with something too long and, you know, they should have seen the light of day and changed course and pivoted. But, you know, conversely, I think, you know, most of us give up a bit too early. And I guess I really internalized this when I was climbing Everest. And when you climb big mountains, there's this concept of a turnaround time. So the idea is to keep people safe when we, you know, to stop them from getting carried away and keep heading towards the summit way too late in the day. That doesn't give them time enough to get home and enough energy to get back to their last camp. And many lives have been lost because they've done that. So nowadays, most people would set themselves a time that they, you know, commit to turning around and start heading back. But when I was actually on my summit attempt, I left Camp 4 at about 10 p.m. at night. So that's what you do. You sort of climb all through the night with the idea that you'll reach the summit sometime in the morning and then you've got the rest of the afternoon to get yourself back down. And so I left at 10 p.m. at night. But after only a few hours, I was just feeling so fatigued, so weak. I was going so slowly. I felt I was going so slowly, you know, that I would have no chance of making it. I was literally taking, I mean, people wouldn't believe how slowly I was going. I was, you know, literally taking two or three steps and having to bend over double and just gasp for air. Wow. And, you know, I now know that this is kind of what must be what everyone else is doing as well, because as it turned out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I felt that there was no chance I could keep going. But at some point I sort of remembered my turnaround time, which I had set at midday, actually. So I thought, well, I should just keep going until that turnaround time. Right. I should, you know, see how far I can get before, you know, turning around. And as it turned out, my judgment was completely out. And, you know, I was on the summit before 8 a.m. But, so it just shows you just don't know. You shouldn't sort of evaluate until you reach an evaluation sort of point. Yeah. And, you know, I think many things in life are like that. Like if you... I don't know, you in marketing things, you know, things take a long time to actually show results or the right kinds of results. So mm-hmm. Say I know people that have, you know, decided, okay, I'm going to give this social media marketing a go. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, put out two blog posts or Facebook posts or whatever it might be. And then they say, oh, I only got one like, or you know, maybe they even got a comment that wasn't super positive, or, you know, my followers haven't gone up, or, you know, things like that. But that's just, you know, way too early to evaluate that kind of effort. You know, it takes, you know, months of consistency to sort of, you know, where you should, before you should sort of evaluate something like that. And that's only one example, but I guess it really brought home the concept to me of you keep going until, and then you define, you predefine what that until what is.
Yeah. So the focus then, until you get to that, the focus is on performing the action. Is that right? Like performing the action that you, that logically will get you there. But you're only checking in to decide whether to continue or not at those defined points. I mean, otherwise, I guess, otherwise every time you perform the action, it almost becomes like an evaluation point, doesn't it? If you don't do this.
Exactly.
Right, it's like,
which comes back to the overthinking. Like it's kind of like you just get lost in your own, you know, thoughts about this. But I guess to some extent, stop thinking about it, just keep doing it until this.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that makes and I think that gets around, doesn't it? A lot of the reason people fall off, you know, fall away, you know, is they end up evaluating, oh, this is not working, lose motivation, you know, and so forth. So no, it's a really powerful powerful point. Really, the you know, take home message here, you know, is really about focusing kind of on the action, you know. So, and that first action for you to perform is actually around defining the goals. So put it in your calendar. That is the action, please. If you're watching this now, like, you know, get it into your calendar to set your goals. And, you know, do the things that may be that, you know, book out in your calendar when you're going to take your holidays, and, you know, book in your calendar time to review your goals, you know, so that, you know, if you've got a weekly 1 hour spot that you can take out now, which will be your goal setting and review, then do that and, you know, do it now so that you've taken some action, create some space, keep those goals sort of front in mind, and you know, those tiny
steps. Your little reminders, post-it notes, screensavers, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and those little steps, before you know it, they will have added up, you know, to something significant. And yeah, so look, thank you, you know, very much, and thank you, Fiona. It's been great co-hosting, you know, this and a topic that I know is very near and dear to your heart. So thank you very much for sharing your knowledge, you know, today with us. And goodbye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Practice Power Up podcast with Damian Adler. Come back often and make sure you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback is important.